This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. For 10 years, Raphael Ezekiel investigated a world where he knew he wasn't wanted, the world of neo-Nazis and other militant white racists. Ezekiel is Jewish. His goal has been to understand the beliefs at the core of the movement and the life histories that lead to membership. He's attended Klan and Nazi rallies and interviewed leaders of the groups Aryan Nations, the White Aryan Resistance, and the Southern White Knights of the Ku Klux Klan. Ezekiel is on the faculty of the Harvard School of Public Health, where he recently began to study youth violence prevention. He creates psychological portraits of militant white supremacists in his new book, The Racist Mind. I asked him if the racists he studied knew he was Jewish.
I made it a point to be extremely open and extremely honest with these folks, partly because since I'm asking people to be open with me, I really have to demonstrate my own openness, and also because it's just an ethical matter. I think you have to be honest.
So who would know when you got to a rally? Not everybody who was there would know who you were.
Well, the leader whom I had notified, whom I had said, look, I'm doing this, I'd like to come by, is that cool with you? He would know, and he would have told some of his associates. But in the chapter where I describe the Klan rally at Stone Mountain, we have an example of a time when my identity was gradually established for most of the people who were there. And there was a great deal of hostility that erupted.
Was it at Stone Mountain where somebody said to you, are you kosherish?
Right. Yes. Zenful said, are you kosherish? And with great intelligence, I said, huh?
Yeah, had you ever heard that expression before?
No. I don't think anyone has.
This is just something he made up? It's not a common...
Well, he was trying to figure out how to say what he was trying to say. And then when I said, what? He said, are you by any chance Jewish? I said, indeed I am, yes.
And what did he say then?
He said, out, get out, out the gate. And one of the other people there said, it's okay. So-and-so said, it's all right for him to be here. And the young man went off to find the Klan leader, the wizard, who had authorized my presence and who was running that rally. The young man came back after a while. Yes, the wizard had said, that guy can be here. The young man looked at me. He ground his jaw. He stared at me, and he said, kill the Jews. I got no use for a kike. Keep Hitler's dream alive. Kill the Jews. He said that a few more times, and he obviously was trying to incite me.
And what did you do?
I went off. I came back. I said to him, look, I did not mean to disturb you. I thought it was obvious that I was a Jew. And if this were the right time and the right place, I'd like to talk with you about why you're saying what you're saying. He said, if it were the right time and the right place, I would show you. And said one more time, kill the Jews. Keep Hitler's dream alive. Kill the Jews. So I went, walked off. And some months later, I had the chance, in fact, to sit and talk with him. It was extremely interesting.
What kind of questions did you ask him?
Well, I was sitting talking with one of the wizards and another member who was a lieutenant for the wizard, and with this young fellow, whom I call Arthur in the book. Arthur sat quietly for the first 2 hours of the interview. He had on his lap a young blonde kid, about 2 years old. I couldn't quite tell whether the child was a boy or a girl. He was holding this little child on his lap with one arm. His other arm reached into his pocket early on, and he drew out a large clasp knife and opened it, and as I was talking with the others, he would stare at me and run his thumb over the blade of the knife. And about 2 hours into the conversation, he suddenly burst in and said, "Castrate the males, sterilize the females, chain them in the backyard for dogs." I said, "What?" And he said, "Castrate the males, sterilize the females, chain them in the backyard for dogs. That's what I do with Jews and blacks. You were asking what would we do if we came to power. That's what I would do. That's what I was thinking."
Go ahead.
Arthur himself, later on, a couple of years later on, left the organization he was in, the Klan group he was in. Briefly, he was leader of that group. It fell apart under his leadership. And soon thereafter, he and a new girlfriend moved from Atlanta up to Chicago to start a new life. On the way out of Atlanta, he called up the Morris Deese anti-Klan organization, the Southern Poverty Law Center, and said he wanted to tell them what he knew. They interviewed him. He had nothing new to tell them that they didn't know already. But it's kind of striking that someone who, on the one hand, could say things that sound as though they come from a deep conviction, on the other hand, can turn against his group so thoroughly. And that shallowness of attachment was something I kept running into that I still find puzzling.
You know what I found interesting? One response from somebody who found out that you were Jewish at a, you know, white racist militant rally was, "Well, I take it you're here in a professional capacity, not as representing all Jews. If you were here representing Jews, then I might really have problems." It's as if this person knew that he wasn't going to hurt you and he didn't particularly want to hurt you, but he had to have a real good reason for not hurting you.
Yeah. I think throughout all of this interviewing, a funny thing was happening. I think, on the one hand, it's interesting that people were cooperative, that my openness was met with relative openness. That's interesting, and partly it says something about, partly it has to do with the fact that visually I look like them. Visually, I'm a white man. To them, I'm not. I am a child of the devil, literally, because they believe quite seriously that Jews are children of the devil, biologically. But when they sat across the table from me, there I was with my blue eyes and my gray hair. I didn't have a great hooked nose. You know, their cartoons of Jews look like medieval pictures of Jews. I didn't look like that. I think were I an African American, I would have had a very hard time doing this work, because visually, every time they looked at me, they would have seen, hey, he's on the wrong side. I think they lost track of that as we spoke to one another.
My guest is Raphael Ezekiel, author of the new book, The Racist Mind. We'll be back after a break. This is Fresh Air. Back with Raphael Ezekiel. He's a social psychologist who spent a decade investigating the emotional and psychological motivations of militant white racists. You know, you write that in the 1980s, the racist movement hitchhiked on farmers' fears during the farm foreclosure crisis, and now they're hitchhiking on the fears of gun enthusiasts, people who are afraid of new restrictions on guns. And I guess that's where the militia connection comes in.
Yes, and since the militia are so new, we don't know much about them. It's not clear to what extent racist organizers have been active in recruiting for the militias. It's very clear with the Militia of Montana, which is one of the original groups, that one of the primary organizers there is a fellow from Aryan Nations. In Michigan, it's not quite so clear who these folks are. It's certainly clear that the insecurity that is very widespread in the country is one of the motivating forces for that organization to come about.
In places where there is a connection between militant racist groups and militias, do you think that the militias are a sign that racists, organized racists, are becoming more dangerous, more armed?
I think I'm going to dodge that question. I think that we are in a time of considerable danger that will get more and more dangerous. And yet, I don't really think that the greatest danger comes from armed opposition groups like the militias. I'm really much more afraid of what people at the center may do to increase central authority using incidents like the Oklahoma City bombing as an excuse for limiting democratic freedoms. I think this is a greater danger than that the discontent would become strong enough, those who are discontent would become strong enough to take power themselves. I think that's unlikely as long as we don't have a catastrophic depression.
After a decade of studying organized white racist groups, how dangerous do you think they are?
I think they play a critical role in helping to buttress racism in this country. I think they help keep the ideas alive. They are capable in selected communities of terrorism and of intimidation. They historically have had an enormous impact. They continue to have a strong impact. Their most important effect is they keep the ideas thoroughly alive, and their rhetoric attracts to them individuals who are capable of very strange and violent action. So I think they damage the fabric of the community, and they do hurt people.
One of the things that must be true about people who are militant racists is that they have no ability for empathy, no ability to imagine themselves as anybody but who they are.
Yeah, that seems to be true. I found them a remarkably... It goes beyond not empathy. It's a great lack of imagination, mm-hmm. in general, a fairly joyless lot. And in my interviewing, I often would say playful things to them, playing around with things, and they never got it. They never got a joke. They're not living a very happy life one would not want to live inside their heads.
You say organized racism is about a mood, lonely resentment.
Yes, resentment. We have been cheated. We have been cheated. What should have been ours has been taken from us. And obviously, many, many people have that mood.
As a Jewish person, having spent a decade studying neo-Nazis and Klansmen, are you afraid?
You mean today, am I afraid?
Uh-huh.
As a Jewish person?
Yeah. You feel personally threatened? Yeah.
I feel threatened by the increasing racism in our society. I feel threatened by the increasing cruelty of the dominant mainstream creed. For the first time in my life, I have some feeling that there could, in fact, be fascism in this country. But if it happens, I really think it will come from the center and not from the extreme groups. And I am afraid of it.
Why don't you think it would come from the extreme groups?
because I don't think the center would permit the extreme groups to gain that much power. We're not a fragmented society as Germany was at the end of the Weimar Republic. Again, as I said earlier, a catastrophic depression might mean something very different. I am afraid that as the economy becomes worse and worse for great numbers of people, there is going to be a drift toward fascism. We really need in our own lives, where we work and where we live, to act, to create real community and real democracy. If we create a vibrant, strong, democratic culture, we have nothing to fear. If we don't, we have a lot to fear.
Raphael Ezekiel, I want to thank you very much for talking with us.
Thank you very much, Terry.
Raphael Ezekiel is the author of The Racist Mind. He's on the faculty of the Harvard School of Public Health.